Welcome to the Niners Wire podcast. My name is Chris Biederman. I'm the editor-in-chief of the Niners Wire at NinersWire.com. I'm joined with my contributor, Rob Lauder. And we are not joined by Kyle Madsen, who is normally our host, because Kyle is on a date. So Kyle will not be available on this edition of the podcast, but we do have, coming up in a little bit, we do have Eric Branch of the San Francisco Chronicle to recap the Niners' 37-18 loss to Seattle. We talked a lot about quarterbacks, Blaine Gabbert and Colin Kaepernick, a little bit about Anthony Davis, the state of the team, some draft strategy, so definitely stick around for that. But Rob, I think the audience should know that if they didn't already, that you predicted a 49ers win.
I knew
in
it was
Seattle
coming.
After they haven't won since Alex Smith and Tarvaris Jackson were the starting quarterbacks. So I'm going to give you this platform to either explain yourself or apologize to the listeners. The floor is yours.
Well, first, I suppose I'd like to apologize. I'll start with that. I'm going to take a break from eating my nice slice of humble pie. And, you know, I felt like I was justified in my prediction. You know, the Seattle's really, really struggled up until the 49ers game. They looked terrible. And the 49ers defense, I thought, you know, outside of Carolina, really, really had its stuff together, given the Rams couldn't score a point. So it's just a really wild occurrence. I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that Seattle just owns Seattle, and anything goes on up in there, and they pretty much have control over. But it seems like that game shattered a lot of the expectations. You know, Seattle was like 10-point favorites, but I think a lot of people expected it to be fairly low scoring, and it wasn't even that. You know, the 49ers scored, what, 18 points? What it ended up being?
37-18.
Yeah, so 49ers still – I didn't think any team would score more than 18 points, and Seattle managed to rattle off 37, and 14 of those were in, what, the first 5 minutes. So it was quite the opposite of what I expected and what I had read a lot of people expected. So, yes, definitely incorrect on that prediction, despite my confidence in last week's episode.
Yeah, no, the 49ers have a new coaching staff, obviously. That gives you a renewed sense of optimism in early on in the season. I think the most troubling thing, though, is the fact, you know, the 49ers offense went 0 for 10 on their first 10 third downs. The defense allowed huge plays early and often in that first half, and the fact that they had misalignments on their first offensive play when Carlos Hyde was split right and Blaine Gabbert didn't even notice that Carlos Hyde was in the backfield. It was a running play. Obviously, Gabbert faked to nobody and then had to slide for a one-yard gain, and that kind of set the tone for the rest of the day offensively. And on the defensive side, Christian Michael's 41-yard touchdown run, they weren't lined up correctly either. And Chip Kelly and defensive coordinator Jim O'Neill said that today. You know, it looked like Mike Purcell wasn't far enough on the right side of that defense, and Michael just found that hole and went untouched 41 yards for the end zone. So given that was, you know, early in the game, I think that's especially troubling considering, you know, what you practice during the week is generally what you do early in the game, and then you adjust as the game goes on off of that. So I think that's problematic because that's a sign of a team that isn't prepared. It's not like the 49ers went up and played a clean game and happened to lose to Seattle, who's an elite team in arguably the toughest venue to win in. In the NFL, it was the fact that the 49ers had a lot of self-inflicted wounds, and you would hope that with a more competent staff than this team had last year, that they would eliminate those mistakes and at least give themselves a chance. So to me, I think that was the most alarming thing about the 49ers' loss in Seattle.
Well, yeah, and a lot of it seemed to be chalked up towards preparation. I mean, like you said, you explained it. You had defensive misalignments. You had a quarterback handing off to no one, which is now in competition with Kaepernick failing to pass to a wide open receiver last season, as far as embarrassing goes. And you had other things like it seemed like it was just a lack of an effective game plan. There was one point, and I can't remember specifically when it was, where the 49ers had really good two you know, tackles for loss, negative plays. They had Seattle kind of pushing back, and then they rushed three, and Russell Wilson threw a huge bomb, and it was like no problem. It just seemed like the coaching, the players, and everything wasn't really up to snuff in that game, and it's almost like it's hard to quantify it. Just they weren't ready for that, and I don't think Seattle has anything spectacular. I think that was proven the first 2 weeks. I just think the 49ers were so unprepared for that game that they made it look easy for a Seattle team that really had been struggling beforehand.
Yeah, so the 49ers this weekend, they play the Cowboys at Levi's Stadium. The 49ers last year, even under Jim Tom Sula, were an entirely different team at home than they were on the road. They allowed 32 points per game on the road and under 17 at home. And I think the Chiefs led the NFL in scoring defense, and they allowed just over 17 points a game for the whole season. So the 49ers defense last year was really good at home and just awful on the road. Which is an entirely different discussion, but I think that should give 49ers fans a little bit of confidence that they'll play better against the Cowboys and a rookie quarterback, Dak Prescott, and a rookie running back in Ezekiel Elliott, who is really, really good, but you know, he's still inexperienced. It's still only the Cowboys' second road game. So, and the 49ers are entering probably the softest stretch of their schedule. They have four of their next five at home, including a bye week before the Saints game. And then after that Saints game, they go to Arizona, they host New England. Those are obviously going to be tough games. Then they have back-to-back road games against bad teams in Miami and at Chicago. Then they host the Jets, which should be a winnable game given who the Jets are and the lack of consistency they've had so far. And then you have winnable road games, back-to-back road games again against Atlanta, at Los Angeles, and then home to the Seahawks. So I think you look, if you're the 49ers, you look at these next five games with four of them being at home, that you really need to win three of these next five and put yourself in a position where you're not at the bottom of the draft next year. And if you're Trent Baalke, you're probably keeping your job if the 49ers are not in the bottom of the barrel and they're not picking in the top five. So I expect, given the week-to-week nature of the NFL, I would expect the 49ers to come out and play better. I don't want to predict a win against the Cowboys because I think the Cowboys are vastly more talented. They have, you know, Dez Bryant, Elliott, like I mentioned. They have the best offensive line in the NFL. They have a young defense with some intriguing players there. But I just don't think, you know, the 49ers beat the Rams on Monday night, much like they did the Vikings to open the season last year, and then they had a really rough stretch at the start of the season, and I don't want to give the 49ers the benefit of the doubt yet, just because we really don't know what this team is, and I think if they would have gone into Seattle and played a clean game, they still probably wouldn't have won, just given how good Seattle is, but there were some signs in that game that I think are troubling, and I don't know how many games, how many teams you'd favor the 49ers over right now.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And I think I'm going to stay away from the predictions for at least a couple episodes, you know, with the results of that. And I guess you could call it the jinx. But I think it's fair to say the 49ers have a decent chance against the Cowboys. And I think the reason I say that is because I think their game plan is going to be able to mirror the Rams pretty closely. And the fact that you have an inexperienced quarterback and a pretty promising running back. And if they just kind of focus on that run and allow Dak Prescott to focus on his passing game, I think that's where they're going to find the most success, is just stopping the run and seeing how capable of a passer he is. I mean, last week, and it was Dez Bryant, he threw his first passing touchdown of his, what is it, three starts. So they're certainly not the team through the air that they are with Tony Romo, and I think that's got to be the obvious game plan there, is to sign up to stop the run, and that's not an easy bid given how good their offensive line is, but you know, sign up to stop the run and see what Dak Prescott is capable of doing through the air. And then, like you said, with that easy schedule, it kind of lends itself to the predictions towards whether or not there's a quarterback switch, and I think if it doesn't happen during that easy stretch, then it's a great proving ground for Blaine Gabbert to show that he should remain the starting quarterback with an easy schedule, or excuse me, an easy stretch.
Yeah, I would agree. It's definitely their softest stretch of the season. And just to recap the news of the week, Jimmy Ward today, the 49ers announced, is week to week with a quad strain. So that's good news for them. I think anytime you have a player go down with a non-contact injury, the way Jimmy Ward did, I think there was fear that maybe he actually tore a muscle, but he didn't. It's just a strained quad. It's not a complete tear. So he's week to week. Jim O'Neill said the 49ers are going to determine Ward's replacement by how Rashard Robinson and Keith Reese are playing practice. And I think though neither of those options are really bad. I think it hurts more just losing Ward, given that he's probably one of their three or four best defensive players. Other news, Anthony Davis obviously retired again, this time probably for good. He's probably not coming back. He suffered a concussion in practice 2 weeks ago before the Carolina game and hasn't participated since. Obviously, Davis had a concussion issue leading to his first retirement in June 2015. He only played in 7 games in 2014, the previous year. He came back. He was in great shape. And it's an interesting story because everyone around the team, the coaches, players, all complimented Davis and how he came back. And he switched to guard. And then just before the season started, multiple reports surfaced saying that he was contemplating retiring again, and then he switched back to tackle from guard and took himself out of the starting lineup, essentially. So it's an end to a tumultuous chapter for the 49ers, and I think the team is ready to move on, and we certainly talked about that with Eric. So with that, we're going to get right into our conversation with Eric Branch to the San Francisco Chronicles. So please stick around. All right, so we're here now with the one, the only Eric Branch of the San Francisco Chronicle, the incredibly stylish Eric Branch, I should add. He came into work today with an Ice Up Sun shirt, which he's made famous around the 49ers facility. But Eric, how you doing, and how was your trip to Seattle?
Well, first of all, I'm doing great. Honored to be on with some of the more talented young journalists on the Bay Area writing team. So thank you for having me. South trip was good. It was much better for me than the team I cover. I at no point was losing 37-3, I don't feel like. And so it was good. I think Seattle's one of the better trips. I mean, it's a great city. I could pretty much copy and paste some of my game stories from previous years, just, you know, replace the Kaepernick with a Gabbert here, and voila, I was done. So it was a great weekend.
Yeah, and along those lines, I think there was some optimism from the 49ers standpoint going into that game, just because Seattle had struggled, particularly offensively, in their first two games, and they lost 9-3 to the Rams, who the Niners beat pretty handily in their season opener. So, you know, I think from that standpoint, going into that game with optimism, and then the way the game turned out, you would come away really disappointed. But when you take a macro look at the 49ers and the games that they've played in Seattle, just like you mentioned, they haven't been good. Even when the 49ers were a contender in the NFC, they would go up to Seattle and Seattle would really take it to him. So I'm wondering if you think that there was anything that happened in that game that is especially troubling for the 49ers, or if you think it was just kind of a typical game that, you know, that, let's face it, the 49ers just go up to Seattle and they rarely, if ever, play well.
Well, I think it was troubling. I mean, again, I wasn't predicting a 49er win. They were, what, 9.5 or 10-point underdog. So, you know, I don't think the sky is falling based on the fact they lost in Seattle. But I think you can, in some ways, have, you know, thrown out Carolina. That was the defending NFC champions. And with all the scheduling things going on there, you know, the 49ers on short rest, the Panthers coming off like 10 days. I mean, you just say, well, you know, what did you expect? And then, you know, so when you factor in what you just mentioned about the Seahawks, they kind of came limping in. Marshawn Lynch, who always runs for at least 100 yards and a touchdown, is retired. Russell Wilson's gimping around. They just put up 3 points against the Rams, who the 49ers had taken care of. There was some reason to think that would be semi-competitive. I mean, like 27-13, 27-10. I mean, that would qualify as competitive going to Seattle. And it was just the manner in which that happened. I mean, the game was over within a minute. And it was just like, you know, the Seahawks were back in, we are the Super Bowl champions form. And that didn't look any different from Jim Tom Sula's 49ers. In fact, you know, they lost 29-13 up there last year and were more competitive in doing that. I mean, it was 37-3, which if that score had held and there had not been garbage time, it would have been the biggest rout of the Seahawks by the 49ers in their series history. And as it was, it was the biggest, I guess, most lopsided score since I think you go back to 2012 when they would beat the Niners 42-13 or something. I could have that wrong. I think it was 29-3 there in 2013. There's a lot of blowouts. I'm going through my mental Rolodex right now. But the point being, it was among the ugliest games, and it, you know, there was a little bit of buzz going in into that, that maybe they were catching Seattle at the right time. In fact, Tim Kawakami of the Merc, who is not known as a not great optimist when it comes to the 49ers, I was having dinner with Tim and Cam Inman of the Merc Saturday.
Let's give a shout out to Tim and Cam.
Hey guys, if you're listening, you're welcome for this plug. I'm sure you really desperately needed it. And anyway, it wasn't many drinks into that dinner that Tim was, and I don't mean to bury him here, but I mean, it was well thought out. And he was thinking, you know, there is a way, if you kind of squint, you could see the 49ers being 4-1, you know, stealing one in Seattle. You know, Cowboys are, you know, not a Super Bowl champion, probably, they're decent. And then getting Arizona on a short week at home. After the Dallas. Now, I was not on board with that 4-1 theory, but just goes to show you, even Tim Kawakami was kind of feeling a little bit of, you know, maybe the Niners have a chance here. So that's a very long way of saying I thought it really was disappointing, and I don't think you should just chalk it up to, hey, this always happens in Seattle. I thought the optics were very poor.
Yeah, and for me, while watching the game, the two things that were most particularly troubling and asking Chip Kelly about it the next day was, you know, obviously the first play on offense, you have the missed alignment with Carlos Hyde out wide instead of being there to take a handoff, and on top of Blaine Gabbert not even noticing that Carlos Hyde wasn't there. I think it was still early enough in the play clock that Gabbert could have gotten Hyde back to where he needed to be, or the 49ers could have called a timeout instead of that disastrous first play from scrimmage that kind of set the tone for the rest of the game. And then on the defensive side, and that first drive, on Christian Michael's 41-yard touchdown, they weren't aligned, and it looked like Mike Purcell, the nose tackle, wasn't where he needed to be, and then Michael ran right through that gap untouched to the end zone. So the fact that they were misaligned in those to start the game, and normally, you know, teams have practiced what the formations that they start in. Those are what they're most comfortable in, and then they adjust as the game goes on. And the fact that they weren't aligned correctly, which is the most basic thing, the most basic fundamental thing you can be as a unit, is just lined up right. That was particularly troubling. So I'm with you. Our guy Rob here actually said he thought the Niners were going to go into Seattle and win, so he was in line with Tim Kawakami there too.
Well, if there's one person I want to be in line with, it's definitely Tim Kawakami, that's for sure. So, no, I mean, my mathematics to it was just, you know, kind of like you mentioned earlier, they thundered the Rams. The Rams were able to pretty much stifle the Seahawks, and I thought, you know, at least it would be competitive with a troubling offensive line for Seattle and a decent defensive line for the 49ers. But watching the game, you would think it was the exact opposite. You would think Seattle's offensive line had everything together. And, you know, like you said, the 49ers defense couldn't even get a line.
Yeah, the NFL is so nuts, right? And if you start doing, which I do, but this team just beat that team, but that team just lost it, you know. And it makes no sense, right? But I guess when we were having this discussion Saturday night, I said, okay, I get like the arguments for the Niners putting a scare into the Seahawks or beating them. However, there's nothing wrong with Seattle's defense. I mean, they still have Sherman and Sanson and Thomas and Bennett. And you're telling me that Blaine Gabbert is going to go into Seattle and find a way to beat that defense? That's why I just couldn't subscribe to the Niners win theory, which doesn't make me brilliant. If you want to call me brilliant, fine, go ahead. But,
you're a brilliant man, Eric. You're a brilliant man.
I know. I saw that coming. I figured these 10-point underdogs just weren't going to win. But it just, you know, Blaine Gabbert is not a quarterback who's going to go on the road unless maybe it's Chicago last year and win a game for you.
Well, even then, in Chicago, he was really struggling until that last, you know, fling to Torrey Smith. So, I mean, it still adds up. He's definitely not a come-from-behind quarterback.
No.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons for optimism, particularly regarding the 49ers offense, is how much better the offensive line has been. And there was some news along the offensive line yesterday, which was, or I guess I should say Monday of this week, was Anthony Davis announcing his retirement for the second time since June of 2015. And it wasn't entirely surprising news. I think if, Eric, I'm not sure if you saw him working out in the weight room during practice while he's been unable to participate in Niners practice with that concussion. He didn't look particularly interested in getting right, and not that there's much you can do, I guess, when you have a head injury like that. But he didn't seem like a player to me when I saw him that was itching to get back on the field. And given his history, it wasn't entirely surprising that the news came down that he retired again. And I know you were there when we talked to Joe Staley today, and he didn't seem entirely surprised either. But one thing that's interesting about Staley's reaction was Staley was one of the guys among many who was singing Davis's praise and all of those type of things, although he was super positive about Davis's return when Davis did come back and he was lighter and everything like that. And then today, Staley pretty much said, nope, I wasn't really surprised when I found out he was retiring. So what was your take on the situation and how weird were things with Anthony Davis?
Well, I mean, look, Davis tweeted out something. He wants to keep his mind intact. As we know, the first time he left the NFL, he cited letting his brain and body heal. So all that said, I suppose there is a chance this was strictly about his health. However, if it is strictly about your health, and I think there's a little more respect from a guy like Staley regarding your retirement. I mean, as you said, it was not something he wanted to discuss. He didn't mention anything about Davis's health. He just said, you know, he wanted to retire, so he retired. Were you surprised? No. No, Joe? Nope. I mean, like, can we now stop talking about this guy? The 49ers issued a 16-word statement that basically says Anthony Davis retired.
Yeah, and there was no quote from Trent Baalke, which,
right,
again, is not a surprising development.
And it goes, I mean, it gets a little murky, but I mean, just to go through the history of how we got to that point, Anthony Davis on September 9th was a member in great standing with the 49ers. He was a starting right guard. I think the day prior, Chip Kelly had gone on KNBR, talked about what a team first guy he was, saying, you know, we asked Anthony to move to right guard from right tackle. And, you know, he was just completely on board. We did that because, you know, we want the five best offensive linemen out there. And he's clearly one of our best five. Anthony Davis then, you know, 2 days after that radio interview, missed practice. Obviously, there's multiple reports that he was considering retirement at that time. He comes back to the team, and he's no longer the starting right guard. He was about to be play that position in a, you know, a real meaningful game for the first time since 2007, and he was about to face Aaron Donald, who's one of the best, if not the best, defensive tackles in the NFL. So suddenly he went from being among the best five offensive linemen that had to be out there in the field for the 49ers and a team first guy to a guy who missed practice. And after he comes back from missing practice, there's no explanation for why He is now just being a backup right tackle. Everyone says it's miscommunication. I asked Anthony Davis, I believe that was it last week, just before he had a concussion in practice, why did you move positions? Why are you no longer the starting right guard? And he said that was a coach's decision. And I said to him, did you want to stay at right guard? And he didn't answer that question. that was telling, if he wanted to stay at right guard, I think he would say yeah. But it was a coach's decision. So, that's why I want to be careful and not discount the fact that it sounds like he sustained a second concussion. And, so I certainly respect the guys in the NFL and what they go through. And if the guy were to step away because of concussions, I certainly wouldn't criticize him. But like I say, just the reaction of the team, reaction of a guy like Joe Staley, and then, some of the things that led up to Anthony Davis retiring makes me think that there was more to it than merely being a health decision.
Yeah, it was certainly interesting. And you made me feel bad because I didn't mean to make light of whatever head injury that Davis is dealing with. So shame on you for making me feel bad for that, Eric.
I didn't even know I was doing that.
No, it's on me. let's going back to Blaine Gabbert. I know you mentioned you weren't particularly bullish on the idea that Gabbert would go in and win a game in Seattle. And I think some people might be expecting that, this is a new offense. He has, he's working with Carlos Hyde. This is the first time these last three games that Gabbert's had Carlos Hyde to work with. The offensive line is better. But Gabbert's production hasn't been there. And, a lot's been made, obviously, of Gabbert throwing short of the sticks and the 49ers not getting enough first downs and starting that game 0-for-10 on third downs. Are you seeing enough from Gabbert and the way he's playing within this offense and functioning Kelly's offense to think that he's going to hold on to this job for a while? Or do you think Chip Kelly it might be in the back of his mind a little bit eager to give Colin Kaepernick a shot, just given the fact that while Kaepernick might not be as accurate as Gabbert, Kelly talks about repetitive accuracy all the time, but Kaepernick adds a dynamic to the running game, to the zone read game specifically, that might maximize Kelly's offense. How long do you think Gabbert's leash is for right now?
That's not a long leash, in my opinion. In fact, I think it's, let me back up and be nice to Gabbert for just a second. He is not, in an offense that probably any other quarterback in the NFL would say, gee, I wish I could change places with him so I could throw to, Torrey Smith and Quentin Patton and Jeremy Curley and Rod Streeter and that crew. So there's not a whole lot to work with when you look at his pass catchers. And that said, he's been protected well. I mean, this is not like, some games last year where you're just like, whether it was Kaepernick or Gabbert, it was like, geez, he never really had a chance to scan the field. And some of his decisions it's a nice way of saying it as well. He's getting the ball out quick. However, when it's third and four on the opponent's 6 yard line, and then you're just in a rush throwing a 2 yard screen to Sean Drone and then settling for a field goal, that's like, as Gabbert has said a few times about different things, one of his favorite words, inexcusable. And it really is. I think it was it 14-0 at that time? And just to say, hey, I'm going to take what the defense gives me in this situation, and then we're going to trot out Phil Dawson. That's just not a winning mentality, and you cannot have that. Obviously, there are other short-of-the-sticks throws, but that was, I thought, particularly galling, given the situation. And he just seems you know, I think he, this is a guy who's still dealing with what happened in Jacksonville. And I think so much in Jacksonville was him making killer mistakes and turnovers. And, you know, the next step in his progression, I think he feels like, hey, if I can just limit mistakes, you know, that's a good thing. The problem is he is not dealing, you know, he's not playing with the 85 Bears. I mean, he has to make plays. I mean, the defense is not going to hold the opponent unless it's the Rams in week one, to single digits. And he just, he is clearly not shown enough. And that's just like, just watching him play and some of the decisions he makes. And then you just look at the raw numbers, and whether it's yards per attempt, whether it's passer rating, whether it's completion percentage, it's either 30, 31, or 32 in the NFL, and there are 32 qualified passers. So, you know, has he done enough? No. I mean, however, if he has a big bounce-back game at home against Dallas, and, you know, the NFL is such a week-to-week thing, then this conversation, you know, when's Kaepernick going to come in, is at least delayed for another week. Because, you know, again, going back to being nice to Gabbert, that's not easy to go to Carolina, and it's not easy to go to Seattle. I mean, he's not the only quarterback who's not had a good time there. However, the fact that, you know, just the way he's played in those games, his unwillingness to take chances down the field, and just the way he's directed that offense so meekly, just shows me that he's just, you know, he's not a guy for the job. Now, as far as what Chip Kelly is thinking, I'm sure he's thinking, well, I'm going to give him a fair crack. And it's not fair to say, hey, you just stuck out the joint against the Panthers and the Seahawks, so we're going to yank you. I mean, I think Chip Kelly really does want to see, hey, I'm going to give him 5-6 starts and see what we have here. You know, that said, I'm sure he's eager for Kaepernick to get close to 225 pounds, whatever his weight is. It feels like he needs to be. So at least he feels comfortable having that option. So anyway, I forget the original question. I just said a lot, but there's a podcast, so I can just ramble, right?
Yeah, well, no, that's perfect.
You kind of hit on it with your very first sentence. You said it's a short leash. So to kind of expand on it a little bit, now, Kaepernick, obviously Kelly's main reason as for him not playing are his health and kind of regaining the weight that Kelly feels or Kaepernick feels he needs to add on. But at the same time, he's practicing every day. He participated in preseason. Do you think there's anything more to Kaepernick not starting than just simply his health?
I think what Chip said yesterday was about as close to the, you know, truth is, like, you know, for Kaepernick to do everything you want and to have, be able to realize his potential, you know, so much of that is about his physical ability. And so I think he wants, you know, Kaepernick to at least be as close physically to, you know, that, you know, the good Kaepernick from 2012, 2013. So at least he's putting him in the best situation possible, you know, from that perspective. Because, I mean, Kaepernick's not known as a guy that's going to, you know, beat you with his mind or anything. He needs to be 100%. I mean, a guy like, you know, I guess whatever the classic example, Tom Brady. Well, you're not going to say, you know, hey, he needs to get to a point where he's, you know, running the 40, you know, you know, like he was in 2013. That's not his game. But, you know, in Kaepernick, I mean, that's a lot of what he does. And I think we saw in the preseason, you know, although it, obviously his final preseason game against the Chargers was a heck of a lot better than what he showed against the Packers. I mean, to me, he didn't have that same explosion in his legs or in his arm, which is, you know, to be expected. So I think that's, you know, I don't blame Chip Kelly for that. I don't know what the front office is thinking, like, hey, you know, we'll make sure he's completely right physically because, you know, we want to lessen any chance we can of him getting injured and us being on the hook for his salary next year. I don't think Chip Kelly is being influenced by that. I think he's just trying to make a good football decision.
And I think it's important to confirm that we do, in fact, not know what the front office is thinking. That I know some people just, contrary to popular belief, they're just incredibly transparent, and we are just really missing the ball on that one. But
well, the good thing for the 49ers, I think they're hitting the best stretch of their schedule right now. Four of their next five games are at home, and all of those home games right now seem pretty winnable. You have Dallas Sunday, which is a tough opponent, but the 49ers play much better at home than they have on the road. And even the Cardinals on Thursday, they only lost by 2 points to the Cardinals last year, despite how good the Cardinals were. They only lost 2 points in that game at Levi's Stadium. They have the trip to Buffalo. They host Tampa, who just lost to the Rams at home, inexplicably. And then after the bye week, they get the Saints, who haven't been able to stop anybody in the early going. So this could be an opportunity for Gabbert to maybe find a little bit of a rhythm, particularly now that the 49ers have such a nice stretch of home games. On the other hand, after that stretch, they have three home games and it looks like five road games to end the year. So it's going to be tough, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens, particularly regarding Kaepernick's weight. I know you wrote, Eric, about Trent Baalke today. This was a smooth transition, obviously, but you wrote about Trent Baalke today, and you're asking questions of the coaches about what they think of their personnel and if they have the personnel right now to be a good team. Can you just give us a synopsis of what you wrote and where you think the Niners personnel is in relation to where it needs to be at this point?
Yeah, I'm just trying to get that story I wrote today back from the Pulitzer Committee. No, I'm sorry. it was not that exciting. My point in today, what I wrote today, was that I'm getting so excited to tell you about it. I give a talk. The 49ers and Trent Baalke said, we're going to construct an elite defense. He always talks about, great teams built through the draft. And through the draft, he has tried to recreate, his mentors, Bill Parcells, 1986 Giants with, Lawrence Taylor and Harry Carson. And I'm dating myself. But anyway, to that point, I mean, the 49ers in their last four drafts, their first pick in those drafts has been a defensive player. Eric Reed, Jimmy Ward, Armstead, and Buckner. And they've had, in the last four drafts, about 15 top 100 picks. And 10 of them, and I wasn't able to measure, but I can tell you that's 66.6 repeating percent of those picks have been spent on defense. And so when you use all those picks on defense, and those are all first, second, or third round picks, and then in week two and week three, you give up 947 yards, which is the most the Niners have given up in back-to-back games since September of 2005. And they went 4-12 that year, by the way. I mean, that's a little disconcerting. Got all these young players that we spent high picks on, and we just laid an egg, in two consecutive weeks. Now, granted, week one was a shout-out to the Rams, and there's 13 more games, and they're in a new scheme. And when you have, recent draft picks, they're young and inexperienced guys. So I'm not saying the defense is horrendous and will continue to be so. However, if the trend continues where, they're not, really stopping anyone, and they're not better, any better than middle of the road or worse, I mean, I think going into this season, Trent Baalke, was his seat was warm. And when you look at what he's tried to do through the draft, and if the defense, which he's tried to build, falls on its face this year, that's just one more reason, to say, I think we need to look at a new guy to evaluate talent. So we'll see. I mean, when you look at some of the individuals, as far as those, young draft picks, they look like they're playing okay, but you put them together in the last 2 weeks, it's been a disaster. I mean, they've given up 12 plays of 20-plus yards, and some of those have been huge plays, like the 78-yarder to Olsen, where it didn't look like people knew what was going on, the 41-yard run by Michael. So anyway, that is another long answer. It was probably that answer was longer than my story. But anyway, that was the gist of it. What I didn't get into is when you spend, I mean, when you invest all that draft capital on defense, you've ignored the offense, and that explains why there are basically zero playmakers beyond Carlos Hyde. I mean, Carlos Hyde and Vance McDonald are the only two skill position players they've used a first, second, or third round pick on since 2013. So you said, hey, we're going to do this with defense. At least that's how we're going to construct this. And, you know, that's one reason why, you know, Blaine Gabbert and Colin Kaepernick are options one and two.
Yeah, and part of the reason, I mean, obviously Sunday you had Jimmy Ward leave the game in the first half with the injury. I'm playing devil's advocate. I'm wearing my Trent Baalke hat right now. You had Jimmy Ward leave the game with an injury. Eric Armstead only played 28 snaps, which were 40%. And I think, I mean, you were there, Eric. We saw Armstead look like the best player on the field for that first week of training camp. And then it seems like that shoulder injury that he suffered the second weekend of camp really has kind of zapped him. And the fact that he's only playing, you know, well less than half the snaps is, I think that's troubling. And I think that bears monitoring going forward. But I agree with you. And I think it's interesting that, you know, the 49ers have built up this defense and then they hire an offensive coach. And I think that makes sense on the surface. But, you know, and Chip Kelly said it last week. He said it. This is a personnel-driven league, and the Seahawks aren't good because of the scheme they run. They're good because of their personnel. And I wonder if, you know, if the 49ers, I know Jim Tomsula was a defensive-minded coach, but, you know, you might be better off if you're building up your defense to have a defensive coach so you know you're really strong on one side of the ball instead of trying to build a defense with a coach that has been notoriously difficult on offenses. As Chip Kelly has been on defenses, excuse me, as Chip Kelly has been since he came into the NFL. So while you're trying to develop this elite defense, it's hampered by the fact that it's gonna be on the field so much, partly because the personnel simply isn't very good. So maybe, you know, I think Chip Kelly lasts the season. I would be shocked unless the 49ers, you know, finish 3-13, something like that Kelly wouldn't last beyond this year. But I think, and we don't know about Trent Baalke's future, obviously, but I think going forward, you have to wonder if you know, maybe a defensive coach would have been a better hire if the offense isn't going to help the defense develop by not being able to maintain the ball and keep moving the chains and everything like that. So the Niners are in an interesting spot because, as you mentioned, it seems like Trent Baalke's the next one on Jed York's list to take the blame for some of this stuff. And I'm really curious to see, you know, what's going to happen in next year's draft. You know, I think we all thought that the offense would be at the forefront in this most recent draft. And then, you know, the 49ers used third and fourth round picks on secondary players, which seemed like their most loaded position. And obviously Will Redmond isn't even playing their third round pick. So I'm curious to see if you know, the Niners kind of do what the Texans did in their recent draft by taking a bunch of receivers early on next year to maybe, you know, put the personnel at the same level of defense so the 49ers can have a little bit of balance in terms of how they're constructing the roster.
Well, yeah, I agree. And I think if nothing else comes out of this podcast, it's that the three of us probably should be leading the charge in the 49ers front office. I mean, they should clean house and we should be in because we have a better idea, obviously, about how to build a football team. No, I mean, it sounds illogical. I mean, right? On the surface, like, it was completely, I mean, even at the time, you know, I second stressed it. Like, really? You just waited until the sixth round to take your first running back, wide receiver, and quarterback? I mean, they took Kelvin Taylor, Aaron Burbridge, and Jeff Driscoll in the sixth round. And before that, they hadn't addressed those positions, which was, you know, obviously very puzzling because a lot of people were like, hey, will they go after Paxton Lynch in the first round? Because who didn't think that was a need? I mean, we didn't know if Colin Kaepernick was going to still be on the roster in week one. And so the Niners were saying, we've got Blaine Gabbert, and we're going to, who's this guy? Jeff Driscoll. It transferred from Florida, ended up at Louisiana Tech. Yeah, we're going to take a chance on him. I mean, even at the time, those decisions were head scratchers. And I think this week, I know I will, Chris, I'm sure you will, everyone will be writing, here comes Dak Prescott and the Cowboys. And guess what? Dak Prescott was available in the fourth round when the 49ers still hadn't drafted a quarterback. And instead of Dak Prescott, they took a cornerback, Rashard Robinson, who'd been kicked out of LSU and hadn't played in a heck of a long time. Could be that Rashard Robinson turns out to be a fine quarterback. But the point is, you would always rather have a fine quarterback than a fine cornerback in the NFL. Trent Baalke was asked during training camp, what is the deal with you not addressing the quarterback position in the draft? They haven't used a top 100 pick on a quarterback, or it might be a top 200 pick on a quarterback in 5, 6, 7 years. Obviously they took Kaepernick, with the exception of Kaepernick. He acknowledged, Trent, who's not usually real polite or courteous with the media, acknowledged it was a fair question, which was shocking. And then he said, that sometimes there have been situations, he didn't spell it out completely, but basically he answered by saying there have been situations where we thought we were in position to take a quarterback and, a team jumped ahead, basically got there ahead of us. So it's not like it hasn't been on their radar, but given that we all agree it's the most important position in the NFL, and the 49ers, for the last year or two, it clearly had some uncertainty at that position. But at the very least, when Kaepernick was still going good, I mean, you see teams like the Patriots and Packers, they'll still take a quarterback in the third, fourth round. If nothing else, that's a guy you can trade. Or it's a guy who, if something happens to your starter, whether he's ineffective, becomes ineffective like Kaepernick, or gets injured, then you have a replacement. So I'm really glad there's a podcast, because I feel like I'm like chatting quite a bit. anyway, I guess that's my answer to whatever that question was.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad you mentioned how smart we are and how good at building rosters the three of us are, because I know on the Niners wire leading up to the draft, I said the 49ers should draft Dak Prescott. And it's a shame that Trent Baalke didn't put more credence into that idea, given the way things have worked out. So on that note, Eric, we've been doing this for well over half an hour now. I think I'm going to let you go get back to your family. And thank you very much for appearing on the Niners Wire podcast. We really appreciate it.
All right, thanks, y'all. It was a lot of fun. Let's do it again.
Okay, absolutely. Have a good one.
All right, Eric.
All right, take care.
And thank you for checking out the Niners Wire podcast. I'm Chris Biederman. You can follow me on Twitter at Chris Biederman for Rob Lauder and the rest of our Niners Wire crew. We want to thank you for listening. You can find us at NinersWire.com. And you can follow the Niners Wire on Twitter at the Niners Wire. See you next week.